Hello, I am Gail, the associate editor here at Friends Journal, and today I'm speaking with David Harrington Watt, who is one of the co-authors of an article in our August issue. Our August issue is on the effects of war, and it has 10 really awesome feature articles on that topic. David's article, along with a writer who is based out of Brooklyn, her name is Marion Ronan, is about Hiroshima and Nagasaki 70 years later, and it's called The Work Continues. Thank you for joining with me today, David.
My pleasure. Thanks for doing this.
So David is a member of Chestnut Hill Meeting in Philadelphia, and he's also a professor of history at Temple University. So David, my first question is, how did you come to be interested in this topic and decide to write this article 70 years later after the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
Great. It came partly out of a desire to collaborate with Marion Ronan. Marion Ronan is actually a very gifted activist, which I'm not. And so we've done events in the past around the anniversaries of the bombings. So partly I just wanted to work with Marion. The other thing is I've taught a course now at Temple University for about 10 years, where I ask students to think about the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. This is not my field of scholarly expertise. My expertise is in the field of North American religions, but I love the course. I love Temple students. It's maybe 20 students in a class. And what they do is they work in the primary sources, and for themselves, they try to think about, well, what explanations can we give for this absolutely, horrendous act? This grows out of my teaching rather than out of my research.
Okay, very cool. So this week actually marks the 70th anniversary of the bombings. Hiroshima was on August 6, 1945, and Nagasaki 3 days later on August 9th. Friends Journal has actually had whole issues dedicated to the bombings in 1995, I believe, which was 50 years after we had a whole issue about it. What, in your view, is the value in looking back and remembering these events, decades later?
Well, I guess I'm mean to be a little provocative, but I guess my answer is none. Because when we remember it, we so often misremember it. And actually, there's an article in the recent edition of the Friends Journal which tells a story about why the bombs were dropped, which is extremely common. It's the most common story we hear. And I would say the vast majority of historians who've thought about this at all seriously know that this comforting story is simply false. So, Gail, we've had a lot of debates lately around the Confederate battle flag and why the Civil War was fought. Well, as long as we keep saying things like the Civil War was fought over states' rights, right, which is what Southerners sometimes say. I'm a product of the public schools of Alabama. As long as you keep saying that's what the Civil War was about and say it wasn't about slavery, it wasn't about white supremacy, then you can't make much progress thinking about race in the contemporary United States. And I think we're in a similar situation here when we think about the only times atomic bombs have been used in modern history. They were used by the United States, and we need to think more clearly than we usually do about why we use them.
Yeah, that's great. And I want to go back to what you said about the story, this comforting story. And you described this comforting story that was told shortly after the bombs were dropped to the US people from the US government. And is it my understanding you came up with that term, the comforting story, for this article? I hadn't seen it used elsewhere. I suppose the concept is out there. But could you just explain a little bit what is the comforting story that people were told to believe?
Yes, thank you. That particular phrase may be something that Marion and I came up with, but it's certainly not our idea. But what we're calling the comforting story is one that was developed shortly after the war was over. It was popularized by an article published by Henry Stimson, who was one of Truman's advisors. We know why he wrote the article. We know who had a hand in drafting it. And it was very clearly trying to stop people from criticizing the dropping of the bombs. So we could call this the comforting story or the Stimson story or the propaganda story. I guess it doesn't matter what we call it. It's more important to note that it just can't possibly be true. It is not here's the comforting story. The comforting story is that in the summer of 1945, Truman and his advisors were aware of what an awful thing it would be to use atomic weapons. And so they thought very hard about whether or not to use the bombs. And they decided, well, yes, we have to use the bombs, although it's a terrible thing to do, because doing so will actually save sometimes 500,000 lives, sometimes 1,000,000 lives, sometimes tens of millions of lives, of both American lives and Japanese lives. So, like, why did we drop the bombs? The comforting story is, in part, because we wanted to protect the lives of the Japanese people. So this story begins to be told shortly after the war, and it's repeated over and over and over again. And you've seen it in the newspapers this week. If you ask the average person on the street why the bombs were dropped, they will give you some version of this. And there's just there's very little evidence to be found in the historical record that supports that story.
So, yeah, it's really how you spin it. And it was as if they were saying we had no other choice and this was the best possible outcome, that there was no other option for us. Is basically what people were told and wanting to believe.
Yes.
Okay. And so the title of your article is "The Work Continues 70 Years Later." What kind of work are you referring to there? Debunking this comforting story?
Yes, that's a part of it. In some ways, it's unfortunate that Marion's not here because she's a very sophisticated activist and I'm not. I'm a terrible activist. In terms of activism, you know, and then I'll talk about it as an educator, but in terms of an activist, you know, it seems to me that part of what needs to continue to do is that people need to continue to stop paying their war taxes, and we need to support people who don't do that. We need to continue engaging in acts of civil disobedience, and Quakers have done that, and we need to support them. And we also need to do lots of more conventional political work, you know. And I think our goal should be moving as quickly as we can, as close as we can, to a world where there are no nuclear weapons and where the means of manufacturing nuclear weapons has been ended. We can't actually get to that point, but we can get much closer than we are now. But as I say, I'm the world's lousiest activist. What I am is an educator. And that's part of what I'm concerned with. We know why the comforting story can't possibly be true. And we know what other stories might be true. And if we begin thinking more systematically about what actually happened, we'll be in a better situation to understand the world we're living in and what to do. You know, just as a mere educator, one of the clear implications is we should stop talking as if there are other countries in the world that can't be trusted with the possession of nuclear weapons because they might use them. As if we can't be trusted, because there's only one nation state in the world that's ever used them, and it's us. So that's part of the work.
Right. So how would you think about this in the context of current events such as the Iran deal that a lot of people are talking about now, including FCNL, Friends Committee on National Legislation, is really pushing for the Iran deal to be passed, and I believe that Congress is voting on it in September. to essentially people are saying this will prevent a war with Iran and that Iran should not have these nuclear weapons. What kind of things can you apply to this current event?
Well, no, Gail, that's exactly right. Like, this entire debate, or much of the debate, hinges on the assumption that there are certain nation states which cannot be trusted with the bomb and that others can be. So the sense is, well, you know, those Iranians, the Iranian nation states, terrible. We could never trust them with the bomb. And then parenthetically, though, of course, the United States and Israel can, right?
Yeah.
From my point of view, all nation states, including the United States, need to be viewed with tremendous suspicion. The leaders of nation states, in my opinion, have a very difficult time just speaking the truth. That, in some level, that's not their job. The leaders of nation states are encouraged, maybe told, maybe feel that they have to tell comforting stories about whatever it is that particular nation state is doing.
Yeah. Well, David, you've given us a lot to think about in history and for today's events. And that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you very much for speaking with me. Everyone can read David's article and Marion Ronan's article in the August issue, which is out now, a French journal on the effects of war. The title of his article is The Work Continues, Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the Struggle Against Nuclear Weapons. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you, Gail.
Bye-bye.
Bye.